Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief for the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic, of whom we are quite possessive. He joins us weekly. The films are Hamilton, The Truth, and The Outpost, once again giving me a sentence or a story. Very kind of you. Hi, David. How are you?
Doing okay, Jill. How are you doing this week?
Not bad.
Good. Glad to hear that. Well, yeah, three films, as we so often do. And I would like to start by talking about Hamilton, which is kind of a phenomenon. And of course, it's really a play, a musical, a Broadway musical rather than a movie. But what's terrific is that the show was, in fact, captured very ably on film back in about 4 years ago at the Richard Rogers Theater, which is where it had its big Broadway run. And the director of it on stage, Thomas Kail, has also directed this video version. And so now it is streaming on Disney Plus, and all the world can see it. I have to say, I saw the stage production a few years ago. I don't remember exactly when. And the thing had become such a phenomenon. It was so astonishingly worshipped far and wide that when I saw it, I had to think, you know, this doesn't quite live up to all the excitement. It's a good show, but I don't think it's all that phenomenal a show. I don't think it falls in the same league as some of the other legendary Broadway productions, going back, say, to My Fair Lady back in the 50s. But it's a terrific show in a lot of ways, and it certainly is a fascinatingly different show in so many ways. It was written by Lin-Manuel Miranda, who also plays in the recorded version, that is this new video version, as in the original stage production, plays the title character of Alexander Hamilton. And it is, of course, very much a show about American history. And it is, in a way, a sort of a biopic or bioplay or biomusical of Alexander Hamilton. It tells a number of important things that happened in his life, both before, during the Revolutionary War and after the Revolutionary War, in which, of course, he was very important in setting up the United States government and helping our country get started on its way, and was probably most famous for starting the whole Treasury part of it, the whole central bank part of it, which is probably the biggest part of his legacy. And again, he is played by Lin-Manuel Miranda. And the show is also unusual in the, you know, aside from dealing with American history and being about very weighty themes, it has a terrific musical score, which is largely hip hop, largely rap music, but also all other kinds of music in it, traditional show type tunes. And it's a whole mix of things. It's very, very eclectic. What the show has going for it, I think more than anything else, is a really good cast and a whole lot of energy. I've mentioned Lin-Manuel Miranda more than once. Again, he plays Alexander Hamilton, but you also have Davy Diggs as Thomas Jefferson and Jonathan Groff, who I really like. The show has a lot of African-American and other performers in it, Hispanic performers and so forth. But Jonathan Groff is one of the white performers as King George, and he is just terrific, really funny. Leslie Odom Jr. is really good at Aaron Burr. There's also quite a few women in the cast who are very fine as well. The show has developed a certain amount of controversy because there are people who just complain about its portrayal of American history, especially in this age. I mean, the show came out about 4 or 5 years ago, when things were not quite as sensitive as they are now in terms of the racial history of the United States. And I think when it first came out, Hamilton was seen as this great progressive step forward. We had this largely minority cast doing this show, which paid attention to all of these issues in American history that are still so timely, and taking, by and large, extremely progressive points of view on them. But on the other hand, nowadays, that things are so sensitive, there's the idea it doesn't deal enough, for example, with slavery. And a lot of people have complained about that. Where is the slavery? It's in there, it's mentioned, but it's not really dealt with as a central issue. And in fact, Lin-Manuel Miranda has said, well, actually, these criticisms are right. And I should have put more in about slavery and about this other thing and about that other thing. But you can only do so much in a single show. And my sympathies are just so much with him there. Nowadays, there's this great tendency to oppose the good because it is not the excellent. And I think that's really a mistake to let the excellent be the enemy of the good. Hamilton may not be as 1,000% inclusive as we would all hope that and wish that it were, but it's also a terrifically progressive show that deals with all kinds of issues that are so salient, gives a whole new slant on what most of us learned growing up about American history, and it just deserves, I think, so much credit for that. So the fact that it's not perfect in all these respects should not obscure the fact that it's very, very good in all of those respects. Just really, really showing us things that a lot of us knew already about American history, but showing them from a new, different, unusual point of view, very, very much geared to the way minorities in American society and American culture look at these things. It's a show with a tremendous amount of energy, and it looks really good on the screen. It's a very well done motion picturization of the stage show, again, directed by Thomas Kail, who also directed the original production of the stage version. And again, I actually enjoyed it more seeing it on the small screen than I had when I saw it on the stage. I think it transfers very well, and I really totally recommend it. Everybody should watch it. It's a good show. Now, for a real change of pace, let us talk about a movie which is called The Truth. And in this case, we have a Japanese filmmaker making a French-Swiss production, French-Swiss-Japanese production, and it has some terrific European movie stars in it. Hirokazu Koreeda is one of the most important of all Japanese filmmakers working today. His recent films include Shoplifters and After the Storm, which are movies, I think, by the way, better than The Truth, which is a good movie but not a great movie. And even though he is a Japanese filmmaker, he has made this film, The Truth, with, again, a couple of tremendous, important, fabulous European stars, Catherine Deneuve and Juliette Binoche, and also Ethan Hawke is in it. So there's sort of somebody for everybody. And the story, it's basically a family story, and Koreeda likes to make family stories. So we have here Catherine Deneuve, an aging French movie star, playing an aging French movie star. And she's getting kind of old, and her memory is not what it used to be, but she still has a lot of magnetism, a lot of charisma. And she has written her memoirs, and her memoirs are just coming out now. And so her daughter, played by Juliette Binoche, who has been living in New York with her husband, Ethan Hawke, comes to visit her mother in Paris on the occasion of the publication of the mother's memoirs, and they bring along their young daughter. And so we have, a lot of interaction between these two women, the mother, Catherine Deneuve, the daughter, Juliette Binoche, over the mother's memoirs, which don't tell everything exactly the way that the daughter remembers these things. So that's what the movie is about. And it's basically sort of a mingled comic and dramatic treatment of what is the truth? Just what would we call the truth? How is the truth the way different people see it, and especially the way different people very closely connected within a single family see it? Did this really happen? Was it really that way? Do you remember it the same way I do? Well, no, you don't. Well, but you just put it in a book, et cetera, et cetera. This movie has, I certainly think, an extra certain piquance coming out right now with this big kerfuffle over Donald Trump's niece publishing this book with all kinds of dirty family secrets in it. The book, the memoir in the movie The Truth, is not that sort of thing, but I think that it's amusing to see The Truth in that light as well. The Truth, again, is not one of Koreeda's great movies. He's not one of my absolute favorite Japanese filmmakers anyway. His movies tend to be sort of, I like low-key movies, but his movies often tend to be really, really low-key, and that really goes for The Truth. But it has some funny stuff in it, it has some interesting stuff in it, and above all, it has a terrific cast. You can't go wrong with the triple threat of Catherine Deneuve and Juliette Binoche and Ethan Hawke. So it's again, not a great movie, but a good movie, and I certainly do recommend it, and I'm delighted that it's out streaming now and that people everywhere can see it. Our third movie today is another great, here comes another cultural clash, another totally different kind of a film from the first two I've talked about, although it does deal with American history, as does Hamilton. But in this case, it is very recent American history, The Outpost, which is a movie which is about the Battle of Kamdesh, which took place, the movie takes place basically between about 2006 and 2009, and the actual big battle was 2009. And this is a war movie. The Outpost is very, very much a war movie, directed by by Rod Lurie, and starring, among many others, Orlando Bloom and Scott Eastwood. Scott Eastwood, by the way, yes, is Clint Eastwood's son, and yes, he looks somewhat like and sounds almost exactly like his famous dad. So that is what The Outpost is. It is a war movie, and it is takes place in this outpost in Afghanistan, where at the very beginning of the movie, we find out that one of the questions that these soldiers have is, why are we at the bottom of all of these mountains instead of at the top of all of these mountains? We can really be easily attacked here. We can be attacked at any time. And in fact, we are getting attacked almost all the time. Every day, attacks are coming. But this is the way that the brass think that we ought to be positioned, and this is the way we just have to be. And so here we go. So The Outpost is about this small band of soldiers, and sometimes new ones come in, and sometimes ones who are there get killed or otherwise disposed of. But it basically is about this very long, strung-out situation culminating in this huge battle in 2009. All of this really happened. Of course, this is a movie which is fictionalized, but it all really happened. And the movie is based on a book by Jake Tapper. Yes, the famous Jake Tapper, who is on CNN all the time. And he wrote this book about the Battle of Khandaq. His book was called, it came out about 8 years ago, called The Outpost, An Untold Story of American Valor. And the movie The Outpost takes its cue from that book. And to me, sometimes I wonder why all war movies are not considered anti-war movies. The stuff that happens in The Outpost, it's a very, very graphic and very, very well, professionally, excellently produced war movie. And it contains such a nonstop string of battle, combat, war horrors that you just have to wonder periodically, at least I do, why does the human race, millennium after millennium, keep putting itself through horrific things like battles and combat and war? In a way, just by, even though it's a movie, that it's very much a guts and glory movie. It's celebrating the courage, the heroism of these men who put, and they're all men, who put themselves through these horrible situations because that's their duty and that's what they're called on to do. But you really have to wonder, is all of this ever necessary? And of course, in the case, by the time you get up into the late, you know, around 2006, 2009, it was not necessary, in my opinion, in Afghanistan, and it's not necessary today. And yet the beat goes on. The thing just keeps right on happening. So again, just by depicting all of this stuff in such a graphic, vivid, and explicit way, The Outpost, which is very much a movie about the glory of heroism in war, is, to my mind, implicitly very much an anti-war movie. But then again, I'm sure that a lot of people will look at it and say, wow, that's really phenomenal. What great opportunity war gives for us all to be gloriously heroic. And I'm sure that the movie will serve as a recruiting film. Among other things. So, you know, it's the way it always is with war movies. From one, look at it from one angle, it just exposes all the horrors of war. Look at it from another angle, it exposes all the opportunities there are to show off your great heroism and in fact, do heroic things. So The Outpost, I think, was made very much to showcase the glorious bravery and courageousness and boldness of these men stuck in this horrible situation and doing their absolute best to do right by their duty and their country, but also it's just such full of such horror that it's hard to watch sometimes. But it's very, very well done. The acting is excellent. The production values are phenomenal. You have to wonder, how do they get all these tremendously explicit war, death, mutilation scenes on the screen? And you have to be ready for that kind of thing when you look at this movie, but none of it is gratuitous. I'm sure that it was just that way when it really happened, and I'm sure that they would have been wrong to soft pedal it in any way. So The Outpost is a movie that shows the horrors of war for better and for worse. And I would like to just finish up with one little plug coming out here. Unsolved Mysteries is back. A hugely popular, long-lived television series has recently come back with a brand new 2020 series, just about a half a dozen episodes. It's on Netflix. And the very first of the new episodes, which is called The Mystery on the Roof, is more or less inspired by a book written by my partner, my personal life partner, Makita Brotman. Her book, An Unexplained Death, is about a death which took place in the condominium building where we live in Baltimore, called the Belvedere. And a number of years ago, somebody very mysteriously came off the roof and died. And ever since, it's been a tremendous mystery as to what happened. It does not appear to have been a suicide, because he appeared to be an extremely happy and healthy young person. It does not appear to be a murder, because, nobody had any reason to murder this guy. He was a very happy, healthy young guy who was living a very ordinary life. So it isn't exactly what the title of the series says, an unsolved mystery. I totally recommend Makita Brotman's book, An Unexplained Death, which gets into great, great detail. And they interviewed her quite a lot, by the way, when they were making this episode. And they came to the Belvedere and they filmed our apartment and so forth. But we're not really in it. It's really very much about the mystery itself, and it's a fascinating episode. We've looked at the rest of the episodes of this new season of Unsolved Mysteries, and I personally think that the one about the body at the Belvedere is the best one. So let me just put in a plug for Unsolved Mysteries, and also for Makita Brotman's terrific book, An Unexplained Death. So thank you for letting me get in that plug, and that is my somewhat self-serving story this week, Jill.
Well, before you do that, I will put in a plug for it as well, simply because I read it. We interviewed her a while back, I believe, and it is quite compelling. So either read the book and see the episode and read the book, or just read the book.
Or just buy the book.
Yeah, right? That's of course.
It's well worth reading. Thank you so much, Jill.
Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Hamilton, The Truth, and The Outpost, the book An Unexplained Death by Makita Brotman.